Satisfied that Lily was as good as dead, sealed in her earthen tomb, Boots spent the rest of the night camped by the waterfall. It was a disappointment to have been cheated of the personal restitution he so desired. Lily was his property, and he regretted the loss of satisfaction he would have enjoyed in rendering her punishment. There was nothing he could do now but feel smug in the knowledge that she was dying a slow and terrifying death under the ground. There were few thoughts spent on the nameless little man who had perished with her, other than the pleasure it would have been to squash him like the bug he resembled. With the morning light, Boot rounded up the two horses that had run from the cave the previous evening. They had not strayed far from the waterfall. He would take them back to Indian territory and sell them. After tying his horses on a lead rope, he returned to the cave under the waterfall to make sure there was no sign of survival of the two trapped behind the wall of debris. With his ear against the wall, he listened for sounds of digging from the other side. Again, he took his knife and tested the wall. Now that the smoke and silt had dissipated, he could see that the narrow opening that had been there had collapsed upon itself, leaving nothing but solid rock between the two chambers.
Ain't nobody digging their way through that. Can you hear me, Lily? Ain't nobody digging out of there! Hell no!
Then a worrisome thought struck him, one that he had not even considered.
What if there's a back entrance to the cave?
The simple possibility of it caused him to scowl once more, and he knew he must have the answer. Outside the cave, he stood back and stared up at the top of the fall and the slope down the side of the mountain below it. He tried to estimate the probable point on the slope that would be right above the inside chamber of the cave. Then he looked around himself at the steep cliff on the side of the fall. From where he stood, there was only one way to get back on top of the mountain, and that was the way he had come down the night before. Wasting no more time, he started back up the mountain, leading his three horses. At the top of the fall, he glanced briefly up at the peak before crossing over the rushing stream and descending through the trees. His eyes sharply scanning back and forth, he searched for any sign of movement. All seemed quiet and peaceful in the hardwoods as he continued downward. His eyes searched for a mound or depression that might indicate the opening for a tunnel. There was none, only the vine and brush-tangled undergrowth and the trees. Finally reaching a point that he considered too far down the slope, he stopped to decide whether or not to search any further. Looking back up the mountain, he felt a confusion of emotions. On one hand, he felt a certain smugness over knowing there was no way out for the slender creek girl. On the other, he was almost disappointed not to find a back door to the cave. He still resented the fact that he was deprived of dealing with Lily and her new friend personally. Seeing two trees that had apparently fallen to lie side by side across a rocky flat, he walked over and stepped up on one of the logs to take one last look up the mountain. A casual glance down between the logs seized his attention. At first, it appeared to be the home of some burrowing animal, but it was a fairly large hole, although nowhere big enough for a bear. The longer he gazed at it, the more it intrigued him. He stepped down between the logs to take a closer look. He immediately felt his muscles tense. The leaves around the hole had been disturbed, as if someone had lain there. The more he measured the hole with his eyes, the greater he considered the possibility that a slender girl of Lily's size might have been able to squeeze through it.
Little bitch!
Dropping to his hands and knees, he tried to look inside the hole. There was nothing but darkness, but as he continued to peer into the empty darkness, he thought he saw a tiny red glow. After a while, he determined the glow to be the dying coals of a fire. It was not a tunnel he was peering into, but a hole, and the floor of the cave was far below it. Certain now that the picture he formed in his mind was most likely what had actually happened, he looked more carefully around the hole for confirming signs. On the other side of the log he had stood on, he searched the ground. She had not left much to find, but there was enough to tell him that she had fled down the mountain.
There's only one ending to this story.
Boots started down the mountain after the fleeing Creek girl. Able to pick up a print here and there where leaves had been disturbed or her foot had slid in loose gravel, he followed the trail down through the forest. Hampered by having to lead three horses, he was concerned that she might have been increasing the distance between them. And even though he was not sure when during the night she had escaped, he was confident in the knowledge that he would easily overtake her once the slope was gentle enough to ride. However, his confidence disappeared when he suddenly realized that he had found no sign of her trail for more than 50 yards. Cursing her deceptiveness, he fumed while he wasted time scouting back and forth along the bluffs in search of her tracks. His one thought was that he must find where she had crossed the river, or he might never find where she came out on the other side. After an hour of searching all along the bluffs, he was forced to admit that he had lost her. Her heart pounding with fear that he might start toward her hiding place at any second, Lily lay concealed in a pine thicket barely 100 feet above him. Like a frightened rabbit with a fox on the hunt, she trembled in her terror, afraid to move a finger lest he detect the motion. Exhausted by her efforts to escape the cave, she had made it almost to the river before having to stop. Being careful to hide her trail, she had cut back to a pine thicket where she lay down on a bed of pine needles to rest. With no intention of doing so, she had fallen asleep, only to be awakened by Boots' voice reverberating up the mountainside, venting his anger. Now, forced to wait until he had gone, she lay on her bed of pine straw, terrified that he might do a more thorough search of the mountainside. When he finally gave up his search and went down to the river, she scurried out of her hiding place and ran in the direction opposite to the one he had taken. Her thought was to find the hidden opening in the cliff where she had followed Burley up from the river.
I'm a damn fool.
John Ward swung a leg over and stepped down from the saddle. Dropping Cousin's reins to the ground, he walked over to the brow of the hill from which he had a broad view of the Grand River Valley. There below him, happily grazing on the new spring grass, were the two mules. Boots Stoner, Lily, and their horses were nowhere in sight. He had realized that he was following the mules alone a couple of miles back when he reached a point where the tracks were clear and undisturbed. But he followed them up anyway, just to see the clear evidence of his stupidity, he supposed.
So much for following hunches.
The discovery was a setback, but he still felt strongly that Boot would return to the nations. He was bound to show up somewhere, so John was just going to have to keep looking. With nothing to go on at that moment, he decided to push on across the Grand, the Neosho, as he still called it, and maybe check on the welfare of Two Buck. He wasn't that far from Red Bow and Dr. Summerlin's clinic. On the way, he could check in with the Cherokee Light Horse and his friend Jim Big Crow over in Tahlequah. It was beginning to look like he was going to need help finding Boot Stoner. And if he showed up anywhere in the Cherokee Nation, Jim's scouts would likely get word of it. John wouldn't admit it, even to himself, but it also served as a legitimate reason for going a bit out of his way to visit Dr. Summerlin's clinic. As much as he tried to stifle them, thoughts of Lucy Summerlin frequently returned to distract him. He could still feel the warm softness of her lips when she had startled him with that quick kiss as he was leaving.
What am I thinking? Didn't mean anything to her. She was just teasing me.
John Ward.
Seated in a chair, leaning against the outside wall of the cabin that served as Cherokee Police Headquarters, Jim Big Crow was enjoying a cup of coffee while soaking up some springtime sun.
What brings you out this way?
Hello, Jim. Just rode over to see if you were working or just sitting around on your ass.
Damn, John. It's a mighty hurtful thing to say to a man who's about to offer you a cup of coffee. Besides, I just got back this morning. I had to go over to Fort Gibson to help the soldiers find a young Cherokee boy that stole one of their horses. What are you doing over this way?
Hoping you can give me a little help. I've been tracking Boot Stoner all over hell and back, and I lost him somewhere over near the Boston Mountains. I thought maybe some of your boys might have heard something. I've got a strong hunch he'll show up back here in the nation somewhere.
I heard you was on his tail. We ain't seen hide nor hair of him around these parts, but I'll let you know if we do. Jim opened the door and held it for John. Come on in, and I'll get you that cup of coffee. The visit with Jim Big Crow lasted for over an hour. John recounted the bloody trail left by Boot Stoner and his subsequent flight through parts of Kansas and Missouri before he gave John the slip. Now John admitted he had nothing to go on but a hunch. He told Jim that he wouldn't even rule out the possibility that Boot might return to his father's trading post on the Grand, and that was going to be his next stop on his way to Red Bow. They've parted with Jim promising to see if any of his men had a notion where the half-breed might have gone. Approaching Wendell Stoner's old place from the south, John paused to consider the horse tied in front of the two-cabin trading post. The horse looked rather poor and neglected. John was sure it wasn't Boots. Still 100 yards away, he watched the cabin for a few minutes longer to see if there was anyone about. Before long, he saw 2 children appear from the cabin behind the store. Both boys, they were playing a game of chase.
Looks like somebody's moved into Wendell's old place. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
If Boot did return for whatever reason, he would not likely greet them kindly. When John was within 30 yards of the cabin, a lone Indian man of perhaps 35 or 40 appeared in the doorway. He stood there for a few moments to judge the nature of the visitor. Although he had never seen John Ward, Nathan Smoke recognized the big lawman from descriptions he had heard. He went outside and took a few steps to meet him, wondering what business the deputy marshal had with him.
Howdy.
Howdy. Mr. Stoner dead. Morning light dead. All gone.
So you moved into Wendell's place?
All gone. Nobody live here now. I take it. I hurt nobody.
That's all right with me. I didn't come here to cause you trouble. But I expect I ought to warn you that somebody might show up here that could make it hot for you. I'm looking for Boot Stoner. He might show up here again. Might not. But if he does, it could be dangerous for you and your family. How many people live in here?
My wife and children.
Nathan turned and pointed to Wendell's old living quarters behind the store.
My brother and his wife and children live there.
What's your name?
Nathan Smoke.
Well, Nathan, I don't know where Boot Stoner is right now. Don't know if he's heading back here or not. But if he does, I'd advise you to get out of his way. He's on a killing spree, and he might not like it if he finds somebody in his old home.
My brother and me, we are not afraid of Boot Stoner.
Well, that's mighty admirable. But I'd still recommend getting your women and children out of his way. He kills everybody that doesn't.
Thanks for the warning, but we're okay.
I'll be on my way. Good luck to you folks.
Huh.
Lucy Summerlin sat up straight in her chair, straining to identify the lone rider topping the rise some 400 yards to the south. Curious, but not overly so, she watched the rider's hazy form in the evening dusk. In a few moments more, however, something about the figure in the saddle caused her to slide up to the edge of her chair, frowning in an effort to see more clearly. More seconds passed before she was sure. Then she got to her feet and fled from the porch.
Damn! Why does he always come when I look like a tired old scrub woman?
What? What'd you say?
Still seated at the supper table, although the dishes had long since been cleared away, the doctor was indulging in his evening toddy.
Nothing, Papa. Somebody's coming. Looks like John Ward.
Her father grinned. He tossed his drink down, got up from the table, and proceeded toward the front porch to greet their visitor.
Well, Mr. Ward, didn't expect to see you so soon. Come to check on the patient?
I reckon. How's he doing?
Tolerable, I guess. But he doesn't seem to take to recovery very well. He's healing just fine if he would just give it time. You're a little late for supper, but I expect Lucy could rustle up something if you're hungry.
What can Lucy do? I heard my name being volunteered for something.
Lucy stood demurely in the front doorway.
Well, hello again, John.
Miss Lucy.
Is that you, John Ward?
Oof!
Two-Buck charged through the door, almost knocking Lucy off balance.
You need to be more careful, Two-Buck.
You get Boot? You find Lily?
No, I didn't catch up with him, and I haven't found Lily.
You come back for me? You need my help, right? You're not giving up on chasing him, are you?
No, I haven't given up. But I lost him north of the Boston Mountains. I followed a trail that turned out to be the wrong one. I'm pretty sure he'll eventually head back to the Nations, though. I'll pick up his trail again.
Well, maybe Lily got away from him.
I'm afraid she's still with him. At least, when they left Missouri, she was.
I'm ready to ride.
Might be best for him to rest a couple more days.
Ugh! Take him, please! He's just about driven us crazy ever since you left. We had to hide his boots to keep him from trying to saddle his horse and go looking for you.
They did, John Ward. They hide my boots.
I can't recall a patient so all-fired anxious to commit suicide. He lost so much blood, he was too weak to sit up in the bed. 2 days later, he wanted to leave. I should have let him go if he was in that much hurry to die.
I'm all better now.
What do you think, Doc?
Probably wouldn't kill him. But he'd best get at least one more night's rest.
Can you stay one night? You're probably hungry. I'll fry some potatoes and side meat and make a pot of coffee. If I go to the trouble, you'd better not ride off somewhere before it's done.
No, ma'am. I'll just put my horse in the corral.
They all sat down at the table with him while he ate, anxious to hear details of his search for Boot Stoner, especially Two Buck. John patiently answered all their questions.
Oh, for goodness sakes, let the poor man eat before the food gets stone cold.
Two Buck let up on him a little after that and even agreed to go back to bed when Lucy promised that she would return his boots in the morning. After Two Buck turned in, Dr. Summerlin lingered a while longer before excusing himself for the evening, claiming to have some medical texts he wanted to study. Lucy knew her father never referred to medical journals and hadn't for years, but she appreciated the gesture.
I thank you for going to the trouble to feed me supper. Maybe I could help you clean up some of these dishes.
Why, that's a right nice idea. I'll just sit down and drink that last bit of coffee in the pot and watch you do the dishes.
I'm
only joking. Sit down there at the table and I'll pour the last of this coffee for you.
Lucy emptied the pot into his cup.
I wouldn't trust you with my good dishes anyway.
Sheepishly, he did as he was told, realizing the woman was teasing him. Feeling like a bungling oaf, he glanced up at her smiling face.
I expect I should go on out to the barn and make my bed, and not interrupt your evening any more than I already have.
It's early yet, and I don't get a chance to talk to anyone but Dad very often. So, I guess you're stuck with keeping me company for a while.
She finished the last of the dishes while he sat watching. When he downed the last of his coffee, she took his cup and washed it.
Would you like to go out on the porch? It's a right pleasant evening.
Why, yes, ma'am. That sounds nice.
There were two chairs on the front porch, but John chose to sit down on the step.
It is a beautiful evening.
Lucy sat down beside him.
Yep, sure is.
So, John Ward, tell me about yourself. All I know is that you seem to wander all over Indian territory all the time. Do you even have a home?
There ain't much to tell. I reckon most of my life is spent in the saddle, chasing after some scoundrel or other. I don't know if most folks would call it a home, but I do have a place on the Poto River below Fort Smith. Ain't much more than a shack, but it's a place to stay when I'm not working for Judge Parker.
I declare, John, I do believe that's about the most conversation I've ever heard from you at one time.
I reckon I have been rattling on a bit.
I've never heard you say one way or the other. At least, I've never heard you mention a wife or family. Have you ever been married?
Nope.
Me either.
Like a tongue-tied child, John was afraid to open his mouth, afraid he was reading too much into what was probably an innocent remark. So he declined to take the opening she had provided. Instead, he sat silently contemplating the toes of his boots until the void became awkward.
Well, I guess it's time to turn in for the night. Good night, John.
Good night.
John didn't leave right away, but sat there wondering if he had said something to make her angry. She seemed to have left abruptly for no reason at all. Although she had gone, he could still feel the closeness of her body. It troubled him.
He would like to tell her that he thought about her all the time, but he didn't know if he had the right to. If he were to openly express his feelings for her, it might strain the friendship of both her and her father.
Hell. Maybe I can talk to her again in the morning.
John was awakened early in the morning by someone moving about in the barn where he had made his bed. He sat up to find a lantern glowing in the dark two-stall stable and Two Buck saddling the horses.
Two Buck? What the hell's going on?
Almost sunup. We better get going if we're going to find Boots Stoner.
John sat up straighter and looked toward the open end of the barn. It was still pitch black outside.
Almost sunup. Hell, it's still the middle of the night.
He fished his watch from his pocket and held it up toward the lantern.
It's still about an hour till sunup.
Maybe. We'd best be ready to go. I saddled your horse for you.
I can see that. I expect we could have a little coffee before we start out in the middle of the night.
Dr. Summerlin and Miss Lucy ain't up yet. If we be real quiet, we can get going without waking them up.
What? That wouldn't hardly be the proper thing to do. Riding off without so much as a thank you?
It's all right. I told Dr. Summerlin we was riding out real early.
Damn it! I've got to see the doctor before I can leave. I've got to get his bill for treating your wounds so I can take it to Fort Smith.
I've got his bill. He stuck it on my boots last night.
Well,
John's frustration mounted to the point where he was tempted to tell the impatient Cherokee that he couldn't go with him. But he didn't have the heart. The young man was obviously about to burst at the seams in his desire to make up for wasted time. After a few moments to reflect upon his conversation with Lucy the night before, he told himself that there was really nothing more to say in the light of day. She had to know that he had special feelings for her. If there was some serious interest on her part, she certainly would have told him so.
Well, since I'm wide awake already, we might as well get started.
He pulled his boots on and rolled up his blanket. While Two Buck waited anxiously, he checked Cousin's girth strap and led the buckskin out of the barn. Two Buck followed. Outside, he looked toward the east, where there was now the faintest hint of light. With a slight shake of his head, he stepped up in the saddle and nudged the buckskin gelding with his heels. Passing the house, he saw that the windows were dark and there was no smoke in the chimney. There seemed no point in waking the household. He regretted the missed opportunity to see Lucy one more time, but he decided it might be best. He might have said something to make a fool of himself. The two riders crossed the little stream that emptied into the verdigris above the house.
John?
Unaware of the lone figure that came out on the porch after they passed. With a robe pulled around her shoulders, Lucy stood watching until the broad-shouldered form in the saddle faded into the coming dawn. With a sad feeling of frustration, she turned and went back inside. The thunder that awakened Nathan Smoke sounded like it was almost right on top of him. Alert at once, he listened to the sounds of the storm outside as he lay in his bed, staring up at the dark ceiling. In the next instant, lightning flashed, illuminating the inside of the cabin for a long second. It was close. He looked over at his wife, still sleeping soundly in spite of the noise. He smiled to himself. He would have to tease her in the morning about her failing hearing.
A horse?
Thinking his pony had somehow gotten out of the corral, probably scared by the storm, he slipped out of bed and went to put the animal back. It was almost as black outside as it had been in the closeness of the cabin. Expecting to find the frightened pony outside the door, he was surprised to find nothing there. He was certain he had heard the horse, but thinking he must have still been half asleep, he started to return to his bed. As he turned, another bolt of lightning lit up the yard around the cabin, revealing a solitary figure at the corner of the building. Nathan's heart almost failed him, for he was certain he was looking into the face of an evil spirit. He stumbled backward in an attempt to flee, causing him to fall on his back.
Before he could get to his feet again, the man was standing in the door, his rifle aimed at the fallen man.
Who the hell are you?
Nathan Smoke. Wendell Stoner don't live here no more. He's dead.
I know that. Who said you could use this house?
By this time, the sound of voices had awakened Nathan's wife.
What's wrong?
Shut up. Light a lantern.
Wendell Stoner was my friend.
I see who can live here and who can't. I got a good mind to shoot you for trespassing.
Boot waved his rifle over at Nathan's wife.
Fix me something to eat. The girl, Lily, she here?
Nathan shook his head solemnly.
No.
Who's in the store?
My brother, his wife and children.
Go get them. And no tricks. Or I'm gonna put a big hole right between your woman's eyes.
Boot pulled a chair over to the corner of the room and sat down with his back to the wall. He held the rifle across his lap and watched Nathan's wife as she scurried about in an effort to find something for him to eat. A few minutes passed. Then Nathan came back through the door, followed by a bedraggled man and his wife, still blinking the sleep from their eyes.
I thought you said there was kids.
Well, they're still asleep.
You're Boot Stoner, ain't you?
Nathan's brother, Lester Chase's Rabbits, had a grim look on his face.
I remember you before they sent you to prison. Yes, sir, that was a pretty bad deal you got. Sending you off to...
You know the girl that was living here with my pa?
Yes, sir, Boot. Sure do. Lily was her name.
Where is she? You seen her around here?
Why, no. Word is that you took her off with you after you left here.
Lester glanced nervously at his brother and placed his hand on his hip with a casual move he hoped would go unnoticed. Boot's eyes never wavered from his face, encouraging him to continue.
I expect if you're looking for Lily, she most likely went back to her folks in Lohawk, in the Creek Nation.
Lohawk, huh?
Detecting a possible distraction, Lester decided to make his move. Very casually, he removed his hand from his hip and let it drop to his side. He hesitated for a brief second, calculating his odds. Boot made a motion as if to get up from the chair. Lester decided to act and made a sudden move to grasp his pistol. It had barely cleared his waistband when Boot leveled his rifle. Boot stared at Nathan, a smile slowly forming on his face, challenging the Cherokee to retaliate. Knowing such a move would mean his own death, Nathan wisely backed away. Boot glanced down at Lester's wife.
Is that right? Does Lily have folks in Mohawk?
Nathan slowly nodded his head, then waited for the bullet. Boot's bloodlust had been satisfied, however. He took the food that had been prepared for him and left the mourning family to grieve.
I'm coming back here. I better not find you here when I do.
John Ward reined Cousin back and waited for Two-Buck to come alongside. The young Cherokee had not complained during the entire day's ride the day before, but on this morning he appeared to be wilting a little, in John's opinion.
How are you making it?
Good. Don't worry about me. I'm getting stronger every day.
I should have left you back in Red Bow.
Suddenly, Two-Buck stopped him and pointed to a rise some 300 yards ahead. Topping the rise was a horse pulling a travoy with what appeared to be two children on the horse's back and three adults walking beside them. John and Two-Buck rode forward to meet them, and upon approaching, recognized Nathan Smoke and his family.
Nathan, what has happened?
While Nathan related the encounter with Boot Stoner, John took a look at Lester lying on the travoy. The wound looked pretty bad as Two-Buck's had been, and the grieving party was still a full day's ride from the doctor's office at Red Bow. Speaking wildly and rapidly in Cherokee, Nathan told Two-Buck about Boot's sudden appearance and how the evil half-breed had ordered them out of the cabins.
Is he still there?
No, gone now.
Lapsing back into Cherokee, Nathan told Two-Buck that Boot was looking for Lily and had most likely gone to Lohawk to look for her there. With an anxious look, Two-Buck relayed Nathan's words to John.
She's got away from him. I knew she would. Now that devil's after her again. We've got to hurry!
Once again, John Ward was no more than a day or two behind the murdering half-breed. By nature a patient man, he was beginning to feel a sense of anxiety over his inability to finally close the gap between himself and the bloodthirsty fugitive. He took a close look at Two-Buck, trying to evaluate the young man's progress in his recovery and wondering if he could keep up with the pace John prepared to set. Two-Buck looked pale and weary, There was a determination in his eyes that seemed to refute what John was thinking.
I am going to Lohawk, John Ward.
All right, then. Let's get going. We ought to make the Arkansas by sundown.
Close to total exhaustion, Lily climbed to the top of a low ridge that paralleled a slow-moving stream. Seeming to have spent her last bit of strength, she sat down at the crest of the ridge and stared out across the grassy flat before her. Lohawk. She could scarcely believe her eyes, but there it was, an isolated settlement of no more than a half dozen homes, scattered at odd distances around one general store. Her body, weary from walking for the most part of four straight days, crossing rivers and hills, was at the point of collapse. Footsore and hungry, having survived on little more than one rabbit and one squirrel, both shot with Boots' pistol, she sat there a while, gazing at her journey's end. Though only 300 yards away, she wondered if she could force herself up on her feet once more. Then, at the thought of what might lie behind her, she turned to look over her shoulder, fearing that she might see Boot. With renewed determination, motivated by fear, she struggled to her feet. On legs that seemed to be on the verge of failing, she descended the ridge, crossed the stream, and trudged toward a grove of cottonwood trees on the far end of the settlement. She had been to her uncle's cabin on many occasions before her parents were killed. They had offered to take her in after the tragic accident, even though they had no room for guests in their tiny shack. It had seemed a lucky coincidence that Wendell Stoner had been visiting friends near Muskogee, and hearing of the young girl's plight, had volunteered to bring Lily home to live with him and his wife. Once clear of the bushes, her brief excitement of a moment before was replaced by a sudden despair. She stood looking at a weathered and rotting shack, obviously vacant for quite some time. Her aunt, Blue Woman, was gone. Despondent, feeling totally defeated, she dropped down on the ground. She could think of no one who might help her other than her aunt and uncle. Her determination gone, she surrendered to the hopelessness of her situation. Boot would find her. He would always find her. It was useless to run any farther, so she lay back on the ground and closed her eyes, halfway expecting him to be standing over her when she opened them again. While she lay there, her brain dizzy with fatigue, she thought of poor Burley Chase, who had been so willing to help her. She knew she was responsible for his death, and she ached in her grief for him. Then she thought about her time with Boot, and what she could expect when he caught her.
It is better to be dead.
And then she became angry with herself for giving up, so she struggled to her feet and willed her weary body toward the little store in the center of the settlement. Surely someone there would know where her aunt and uncle had gone.
My lord in heaven.
Jonah Feathers glanced up to see the bedraggled young girl approaching his store.
What happened to you, child? Ruth, come out here!
He stood gaping, hands on hips, wondering what to make of the half-starved Indian girl, now within a dozen yards of the door and staggering drunkenly. From the sunken-eyed look of despair in the thin face, he knew that he had best have his wife talk to her. Ruth Feathers, a full-blooded Creek, appeared in the doorway just as Lily stopped before Jonah. The obviously distressed young girl said nothing at first, shifting her gaze from Jonah to settle on his wife. But when she spoke, it was a simple question.
Blue Woman?
Blue Woman?
He knew a Creek woman named Blue Woman. She was the wife of Tom Talltree.
What do you mean? You looking for Blue Woman?
Lily nodded. Ruth had been studying the desperate young girl intensely.
She's looking for her Aunt Jonah.
Ruth stepped forward and took Lily's hand.
I didn't recognize you at first, but you're Walking Owl's daughter, aren't you? You remember Jonah? Her folks were killed a few years ago, drowned in the Canadian River. Ain't that right, honey?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I can't recall your name, but I remember you now. Went to live with a family in the Cherokee Nation.
Lily, do you know where I can find my aunt?
Sure we do. They built a new place over on Black Rock Creek. Jonah will take you over there. But first, I need to fix you something to eat. You poor child. When did you last eat?
What happened to you? How come you're back here? Did you run away from them folks that took you in?
They're dead.
Seeing the shock in both faces staring at her, Lily related the tragic homecoming of Boot Stoner. She told them of her captivity and her subsequent escape, embellishing as little as possible, ashamed to tell all the details of her time with Boot.
Oh, you poor child. Let me get you something to eat, and then Jonah can hitch up the wagon and take you to your aunt. It's about 2 miles from here, and you don't look like you can walk another step.
They sat Lily down in a chair behind the counter and bade her to rest while Ruth fried some corn mush and beans, the quickest thing she could come up with. Feeling she was safe for the moment, Lily relaxed and was soon dozing, sitting up in the chair.
Oh, that poor thing. No soul on this earth should have to go through what she's gone through. Just look at her. She's already asleep.
That child might still be in for some bad times. I heard some talk about Boot Stoner already. He's been on a killing spree over in the Cherokee Nation. I didn't know he'd murdered his own parents, though.
You think he will try to follow her in the Creek Nation?
Maybe not. Maybe he won't want to risk getting your people stirred up against him. But from what it sounds like, he's a crazy son of a bitch.
Ruth let Lily sleep until her food was ready, then awakened her.
You need to eat something, child.
Still drowsy, Lily let herself be led into the kitchen behind the store and sat down at the table. She needed no encouragement to eat. Half-starved, she devoured the meal. When she had cleaned the plate, she made motions to wash it, but Ruth stopped her.
Oh, you just sit there. I'll take care of this, and my husband will hitch up the wagon.
Lily sank back in the chair gratefully. When Ruth turned around after washing the plate in the dishpan, the exhausted girl's head was down on the table. Ruth stood, hands on hips, watching her for a few moments before calling to her husband.
Jonah, never mind hitching up the wagon. Let's pick her up and carry her onto the bed. You can take her over to Tom's in the morning.
Lily slept through the afternoon and the night that followed. Her mind, free of fear for the time being, insisted upon time to rest and recover. Ruth felt certain she could not have awakened her even if she had tried. When morning came, Lily woke up to the aroma of fresh-brewed coffee and bacon. She looked around her frantically, not sure where she was.
Well, look who's awake. Good morning, sleepyhead. Feel like something to eat?
As she looked around, Lily at once felt confused. There was but one bed in the room, and she realized that she had occupied it.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to fall asleep.
Oh, nonsense, child. You needed to sleep.
But where did you sleep?
Then she spied a couple of quilts rolled up against the wall.
I took your bed.
Don't you worry your head about it. Now, if you're ready for breakfast, there's a basin of water by the pump, and the outhouses back of the barn.
Yeah.
Tom Talltree followed his mule to the end of the row and turned the animal to start back up the next row. It had not been an easy transition to make a farmer out of Tom, but there was little choice if he and his wife were going to have food to eat. He was nearing the end of the second row when he glanced up to see a horse and wagon approaching from the bend in the road. He recognized the portly figure of Jonah Feathers, but not the woman sitting in the seat beside him. It was not Ruth. This person was much smaller than Jonah's wife. He stopped the mule at the end of the road and waited. Glancing toward his cabin, he saw that Blue Woman had heard the wagon and had come to stand in the doorway.
Hey-o, Tom. I got somebody here that's come to see you.
When the cart pulled up, Tom recognized his brother's child sitting next to Jonah.
Lily?
Blue Woman hurried out the door to greet her niece.
Lily, is that really you?
It's her, all right.
What's wrong, child?
The lines of distress were evident in Lily's weathered face.
What have they done to you?
Lily climbed down from the wagon seat into her aunt's embrace. Lily was quick to explain that she had suffered no harm by the hand of Wendell Stoner. She explained that she had not run away from Wendell and Morning Light, but from their savage son. Jonah Feathers watched with keen interest as Lily told of her escape from the evil half-breed, observing the concern registering in Tom's face. The thin, somber-faced Creek farmer was already thinking of the possible trouble the runaway girl might visit upon his household, Though eager to help the young lady in distress when she arrived at his store, Jonah was just as eager to be done with her.
Looks like you're trying to get your spring plowing done, Tom.
Yes, trying to.
But Tom had other concerns now. Like Jonah, he had heard of Boot Stoner's rampage in the Cherokee Nation.
Well, I'd best get back to the store. Good day to you folks.
Oblivious to the rain beating against his face like tiny stinging insects, Boot Stoner pushed steadily through a driving thunderstorm. Brilliant flashes of lightning lit up the bluffs before him for brief seconds and illuminated the cruel anger of his face, anger that drove him well past sundown and into the night. Unconcerned for the welfare of his horses, he had not stopped for food or rest the entire day. Only the Arkansas River stopped him now, further fueling his anger. In his mind, he had been wronged, betrayed by the slight Creek girl, and the lust for vengeful punishment for such a crime was the one driving force in his mind. Running high from spring rains, the Arkansas was too risky to cross in the dark, in the midst of a violent storm, and with animals already weary from a day's travel. Obsessed as he was to get to Lohawk, it was obvious even to him that he could lose the horses and gear if he attempted to cross over that night. Cursing the night and the storm, he reluctantly sought shelter among the trees along the bluffs of the river. The storm passed during the early hours of the morning, and the new day broke bright and clear. It would have been a refreshing and cheerful sight to most people, but no such potential resided in Boot Stoner's dark mind. Anxious to get underway again, he saddled his horse, then paused to examine the two he had picked up at the old man's cave. The dun that Lily had ridden seemed in good shape. The old horse that had belonged to the man was showing its age after being pushed so hard the day before, and was standing with its head down and ears drooping. The very sight infuriated Boot. The chore taken care of, he stepped up in the saddle and started out along the bluffs, looking for a likely place to cross over into the Creek Nation. Only one full day's ride from the bend in the Arkansas where Boot Stoner crossed over, an uneasy homecoming was taking place in the home of Tom Talltree. Blue Woman came out to the garden to bring him water.
What are we going to do about her?
What do you mean? She is our niece, your brother's child. We will take care of her.
There's barely enough for the two of us. How can we take her in?
Lily is a bright girl. She can help you in the garden and help plant the corn. She can help me in the house.
What if this Boot Stoner is still chasing her? What if he comes here looking for her?
Then we will hide her and tell him she is not here, and he can go look for her somewhere else.
I don't know. It's bad business, that Boot Stoner. From what the girl says, he's left a string of dead people everywhere he's been. I just wish she had lit somewhere else.
Tom, we can't send her away. Not again. We're all the family she's got.
Foreboding thoughts initiated earlier in the garden were still fresh in Tom's mind at supper time. Although Blue Woman did her best to put a cheerful face on the meager meal, it was obvious that her husband was still in a brooding mood.
Look who's up and feeling fit, Tom! Lily helped me fix supper. She knows her way around the kitchen.
Well, it all looks good enough to eat.
The meal was taken in almost total silence, with an occasional comment from Blue Woman the only interruption. Though she made no reference to it, her husband was stoically quiet, a practice atypical for one who was usually so talkative. When she sought his gaze, he avoided her eyes, his own focused upon his plate. She knew he was still brooding over their guest. Supper finished, Tom got up from the table and went out on the front porch to smoke. After Lily went to bed, Blue Woman joined her husband on the porch.
You are very quiet tonight.
There was nothing I wanted to talk about.
It still bothers you.
She brings danger to our home. She has no right to bring this down on us.
Keep your voice down. She will hear.
Tom did as he was told, but it was too late. The tiny house, still warm from the kitchen stove, had caused Lily to abandon the idea of sleeping. She decided to seek the comfort of the porch with her aunt and uncle and was at the door in time to hear Tom voice his concerns. Undetected by the two on the porch at that point, she backed away and returned to her bed. The fear she held for Boots Stoner had never left her mind completely, but it had faded to the point where she was free of it for extended periods in the last couple of days. It was much like the time she spent with Burley Chase before Boot found her there. Now that fear returned to torment her once again, for after hearing her uncle's comments, she knew she was not welcome there. She must run again. Lying awake in the little corner that served as her bedroom, Lily waited until Tom and Blue Woman went to bed. Moving as quietly as she could manage, then she got up and gathered the few belongings she had brought with her from Burley's cave. The only thing she took from her uncle was the blanket on her bed. She reasoned that they would gladly give her the blanket in exchange for her departure. Moving silently through the tiny cabin, she lifted the latch on the door and let herself out. The night air was chilly, so she wrapped the blanket around her shoulders as she stood trying to decide which way to go. East or west, north or south, it made little difference. She had no destination in any direction, nowhere to seek refuge. So she stepped off the porch and started walking along the creek, not really caring in which direction she went. Jonah Feathers stepped up on a chair in order to reach a bolt of calico on the top shelf. His customer, Bonnie Rainwater, watched his efforts with intense interest.
Is this the one you want?
Yes, that's it.
Jonah pulled the bolt of cloth from under several others. He turned to hear her response. He dropped one end of the bolt, causing it to fall against the side of the chair, almost overturning it. One glance at the menacing figure standing by the door told him that he had come face to face with Boot Stoner. Puzzled by Jonah's sudden distress, Bonnie Rainwater turned to follow the direction of his wide-eyed stare. Though she knew nothing of Boot Stoner and Lily, she recognized evil in that pitiless face.
Good morning. I'll be with you just as soon as I help this lady with some cloth.
I'm looking for somebody, a girl. She came this way. Lily's her name. Where is she?
Lily? I don't know no Lily that lives in Lohawk. What's her last name?
I don't know her last name. Have you seen her or not?
I can't recall seeing no strange girl around here.
Jonah glanced nervously at Bonnie. Boot followed his gaze. Jonah silently thanked God that he had not gotten around to telling Bonnie about the sudden appearance of Walking Owl's daughter, Lily.
Anything else I can help you with?
How many houses in this place?
Half a dozen right around Lohawk. A couple more over on Black Rock Creek. There's a bigger town 10 or 12 miles from here. Ukmogee? Maybe that's where she went.
Boot turned abruptly and walked outside. Looking to the north, he focused his gaze on the closest house. Bonnie Rainwater ran out of the door after him.
No! No! My house! My house! No girl there!
Is that so? Well, I reckon I'll just have to see for myself.
Boot stepped up in the saddle and started toward Bonnie's house, with the terrified creek woman running after him. Although relieved to see the menace depart, Jonah knew it was probably not the last he would see of him.
Ruth!
What is it?
Ruth came from the back room.
Boot Stoner was just here.
Jonah handed her his shotgun.
You keep this handy in case he comes back. I'm gonna run over to Henry Redshirt's and send his boy to fetch the police. I'll be right back.
Concerned that Boot might happen to look back and see him running for help, Jonah slipped out the back door. Crossing the creek by the footbridge, he ran as best a man of his heft could toward a weathered frame house a quarter of a mile away. Finding Henry and his 13-year-old son in the yard, Jonah explained his unlikely mode of travel. After hearing Jonah's account of Boot Stoner's visit, Henry immediately sent his son galloping toward Ukmogee. While the young creek boy was dispatched to bring help, Boot Stoner had searched Bonnie Rainwater's house, and not finding Lily, he had gotten back on his horse, determined to search every cabin at Lohawk. Like a crazed bear bent on destruction, Boot went from house to house, ransacking his way through room after room, leaving terrified residents in his wake. By nightfall, Boot had searched all the cabins but one. He rode up to George Longpath's tiny cabin. There was no sign of anyone about, no lamps lit, no smoke from the chimney. yet Boot sensed someone watching him.
That's far enough, mister. You can turn right around and get off my property.
Send Lily out here and I'll do that.
There ain't nobody named Lily here. So get moving, else I'll let you have both barrels of this shotgun.
All right, then. I'm leaving.
Inside the barn, Sarah Longpath sat watching the house through a crack in the door. She was barely able to make out the form of a man on horseback seeming to talk to her husband. With the pistol in her lap, she strained to hear what was being said, but it was too far away. Behind her, sitting in terrified silence, were two children and her neighbors, White Bear and his wife Walks All Day. She watched as the man on horseback rode back the way he came. She waited for what seemed like an eternity in the darkness until her youngest broke the silence.
Mama, why don't you light the lantern?
Yeah, Mama. Why don't you light the lantern?
Quickly, Sarah grabbed the pistol from her lap and spun around. The thick darkness was split momentarily by the muzzle flash. Unfortunately for her, it pinpointed her position. Booth took out his rage on the remaining occupants of the barn. Shocked by the gunshots, George came running into the barn from the house. He skidded to a stop when he saw his family's blood painting the inside of the wooden structure.
You should have told me where the girl is.
Boot went inside the small cabin to see what he could find to eat. He had been wrong. Lily was not there. But he was still confident that she was hiding somewhere in the settlement. It occurred to him that maybe he should stay put and let the people come to him.
I'll let them know where to find me.
A sizable crowd of frightened and disoriented residents of Lohawk gathered in Jonah Feather's store, seeking refuge in the safety of numbers. Henry Redshirt was one who spoke for immediate action instead of waiting for the Creek police to come.
If we wait for my son to get back with the police, this mad dog may murder more of us. I say we get what weapons we have and go after this killer. Who's this woman he looks for?
It's Lily, Walking Owl's daughter. She came back looking for her aunt and uncle. I took her over there yesterday.
Why didn't you tell him that? Then maybe he wouldn't have terrorized the rest of us.
She was running from him. Didn't seem right to tell him where she was.
Maybe not. But now we got us a problem we have to take care of. I stood by like the rest of you and didn't do nothing when he went through my house. I ain't exactly proud of that. But he can't fight all of us if we stick together. I say to hell with waiting for the police. Let's go find that bastard and hang him.
Most of the folk were already armed with old shotguns, pistols, and single-shot rifles.
All right. The last time I saw him, he was going up to George's place.
Is he still there?
He's there, all right. Come, take a look.
Ruth was standing by the window of the shop. Everyone crowded around trying to get a look. There, in the direction of George Longpath's house, the moonless black sky was aglow with a cloud of flames.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. We better get moving.
The quickly formed posse moved out, a conglomeration of horses and wagons, some riding mules in the direction of George Longpath's house. The posse halted when they discovered George Longpath's body lying just outside the barn door.
Ah, poor George. Where's Sarah?
Let's look in the barn.
Henry guided his horse toward the one remaining building, the rest of the posse following behind. Pulling up before the front of the barn, they were startled by the sudden appearance of Boot Stoner. Springing to his feet, Boot stood above them on the roof, his rifle aiming down at the leaders of the posse at point-blank range.
Nice of you folks to make a call. Now I'm gonna tell you how things are gonna be around here.
Ben Highwalker decided to take a risk. He didn't even get his old Springfield rifle hip high.
Anybody else?
There were no takers.
All right. Here's the way things are. I know somebody here is hiding a Creek girl named Lily. She's my property, and I've come to get her.
Boot motioned toward the burning house behind them.
That's the first one. I'll burn every last one of you out if you don't hand over the girl.
Ain't none of us knows anything about the girl. Leastways, she ain't here, and that's the God's honest truth. Why don't you just move on? You've done enough killing here.
You take me for a fool? She's here, and I'll burn this town to the ground if I don't get her back.
There's a lot more of us than one man can handle. We could spread out and make it pretty hot for you.
Is that so? Well, how are you going to back away from here right now before I start shooting?
Struck with the sobering realization that they had allowed themselves to ride right up under him, and knowing that this was not an idle boast, a clammy fear gripped the entire posse.
All right. If you'll hold your fire and let us back off, we'll bring you the girl. Fair enough?
I thought so. Make it quick. I'm running low on patience.
Once they had retreated beyond the glow of the firelight, the posse crowded together to question Jonah.
You planning to go over to Tom Talltree's and fetch the girl back here?
I don't know. I didn't see how to tell him anything else to keep from getting half of us shot. He had us dead to rights.
I say give him the damn girl. He's killed enough of us already.
That's right.
Wait a minute. Why ain't Tom here?
No one could answer for sure, but it was assumed that he simply had not heard what was going on. His new house was a considerable distance from the others, and there was a high ridge between there and Lohawk. They had just about decided to go in search of Lily when out of the darkness rode Captain Jack Wildhorse with two privates from the district police. With great relief, Jonah and Henry turned the problem of the renegade half-breed over to the Creek Light Horse.
You got a fair piece of work ahead of you, Jack. He's a wild hog killer, and he's holed up on top of the barn.
Boots Stoner. We heard about him from the Cherokee Light Horse. A deputy marshal has been trying to track him down, but he ain't been able to corner him.
John Ward?
That's what I heard.
I wish to hell John Ward was here now.
Well, don't worry. Me and my boys will take care of Mr. Stoner.
Wasting no more time, Wild Horse directed his men, sending one to each side of the barn. Waiting long enough to give his men time to get in position, he then rode his horse up to the edge of the firelight from the flames of the house and dismounted. He pulled his horse around so that it stood between him and the barn.
All right, Stoner. This is Captain Jack Wildhorse of the Creek Light Horse. We've got you surrounded. There ain't no way out of that barn except through us, so you might as well come on out peacefully.
Jack had made a fatal mistake in assuming Boot was still on the barn roof. In reality, Boot had snuck around behind the burning house where he had the perfect shot at Jack Wildhorse. Wildhorse's two men, not knowing Boot's true location, immediately started firing at the barn with no visible target. While the two policemen pulled back to consult with the rest of the posse, Boot moved to the back of the barn where he had left his two horses. Mounting up, he walked the horses into the woods behind the barn, disappearing into the night. By the time the posse had finally regrouped and decided to come at the barn again, the danger had long since passed. They stood perplexed, staring at the gruesome sight of the blood-drenched barn. Boot was nowhere to be found.
Gone? He got away?
He slid out from here. It's too dark to track him tonight. We'll have to wait till morning.
I hope to hell that's the last we'll see of him around here. I expect it'd be a good idea for somebody to ride over to warn them folks over on Black Rock Creek that trouble might be coming their way.
Still feeling a sense of importance for having successfully delivered the Creek Light Horse, Henry's son volunteered to take on the mission.
You be careful, Jimmy.
Jimmy nodded and galloped away in the darkness. Sitting, watching from the dark shadows of the cottonwoods that ring George Longpath's lower field, Boot smiled to himself when the lone rider galloped along the road on the far side of the field.
I wonder where he is going in such a hurry. Might be a good idea to find out.
Boot waited until Jimmy had rounded the curve at the north end of the field, then started out after him.